All right, let's read the translation. Thus I began chanting the holy name and fame of the Lord by repeated recitation, ignoring all the formalities of the material world. Such chanting and remembering of the transcendental pastimes of the Lord are benedictory. So doing, I traveled all over the earth, fully satisfied, humble and unenvious. Narada Muni is talking here about himself. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The life of a sincere devotee of the Lord is thus explained in a nutshell by Narada Muni by his personal example. Such a devotee, after his initiation by the Lord or his bona fide representative, takes very seriously chanting of the glories of the Lord and traveling all over the world so that others may also hear the glories of the Lord. Such devotees have no desire for material gain. They are conducted by one single desire, to go back to Godhead. This awaits them in due course on quitting the material body. Because they have the highest aim of life, going back to Godhead, they are never envious of anyone, nor are they proud of being eligible to go back to Godhead. Their only business is to chant and remember the holy name, fame, and pastimes of the Lord, and, according to personal capacity, to distribute the message for others' welfare without motive of material gain. So, yeah, there's quite a few nice points there. So first of all, let me ask for the blessings of all the assembled devotees, especially the senior devotees. I'm sure there's a few Prabhupada disciples here. So I will do my very best to offer some humble service. So, yeah, after Narada Muni had the darshan of the Lord and heard the Lord speak to him, for the rest of that lifetime, he was deeply longing for Krishna. He was hankering, longing for Krishna. He filled his chanting of the holy name and his remembering with this longing. So Chinnananda Swami often talks about this, like, that Narada Muni was cultivating this kirtan of longing. And actually, also we devotees, sooner or later, we should actually get to this point where we develop transcendental emotions. Of course, we don't want to be sahajiyas and imitate that, but at least we should know that that stage of spiritual practice sooner or later should come, that we actually develop and cultivate some longing there for Krishna. And Narada Muni is teaching us that, actually. And of course, our actual problem is that we don't really long for Krishna. We actually still deep down we think that we can do quite nicely without Krishna, you know, because we have been for so many lifetimes in forgetfulness of Krishna. So this actually requires some deeper paradigm shift there. It's not just an external thing of just joining ISKCON and becoming initiated, wearing tilak neck beads, walking around with bead bags. So no, there is some further internal transformation required, because for so many lifetimes we have gotten used to be in forgetfulness of Krishna. And this doesn't happen automatically, that this change takes place actually. We have to hear about the importance and we have to cultivate this. And of course, how do we cultivate this? The main way how we cultivate is when we chant in japa. First in japa, and japa is the foundation to kirtan. So in our chanting, as we probably all know, that's when we re-establish this lost and forgotten relationship with Krishna, in our chanting. Because as we know, Krishna and the holy name, non-different. So without Krishna giving us this, his holy name, we actually would have no chance to re-establish this lost and forgotten relationship. So through the chanting, this is how we connect. And this is the main and foremost time when we should cultivate this longing and calling out to Krishna. So, but this is only possible when we have deeply understood the knowledge of Sambandha Gyan. When the Sambandha Gyan has hit the heart level. Sambandha Gyan is, who am I? Who is Krishna? What is this whole material world all about? That's the Sambandha Gyan. So let us understand what is the immediate emotion which the living entity experiences when that Sambandha Gyan actually hits the heart. Can I ask you? What is the immediate emotion when this knowledge of Sambandha Gyan hits the heart? What is the immediate emotion? You probably remember from the Holy Name Retreat, no? It's a little part of Holy Name Retreat in Ekachakra. But anyway, yes. Comes later. The immediate emotion. Huh? What? Loss? No, when we realize, oh, we have an eternal relationship with Krishna, what's the immediate emotion? Comes later. Immediate. Comes all later. Now, just to speed up the process here, I will help a little bit. Now, the immediate emotion is actually regret, repentance. Oh, I have forgotten this relationship for so many lifetimes. That's the immediate emotion. I want to share a nice series of verses with you from the Prema Vivata, which very nicely illustrate the internal situation of a devotee. So verse number 7 is, roaming about in the material world, taking one birth after another, if by chance the living entity comes in contact with a saintly person, he becomes immediately knowledgeable of his true identity as pure spirit soul, an eternal servant of Krishna. So this roaming about very nicely describes our situation, or the situation of the living entity, roaming up and down. So, and then it says we immediately become knowledgeable. Unfortunately, with us, it's maybe not so immediate all the time. But that's the idea. When we meet a pure devotee, we get this Sambandha Gyan. So the next verse. Enlightened by this knowledge, he does not want material entanglement any longer. And he laments. Here we have it. Alas, why have I served this illusory material energy for so long? That should be the immediate emotion in the heart. We lament. Oh, I have ignored Krishna for so many lifetimes. So we can already assess ourselves a little bit here and see how much do we actually lament about that. You know? Are we thinking, oh, I'm actually pretty cool and all right. I did maybe some other things before I met the devotees, but anyway, it was all pretty cool and great. So then that is an indication that actually the Sambandha Gyan has not really hit the level of the heart yet. It is still Vigyan. It's not Vigyan. It's just on the level of the mind and intelligence, but it has not really sunk deeper. Otherwise, we would lament. Then it continues, verse number 9. He bitterly regrets and cries out, Krishna, my Lord, I am your eternal servant. Ever since I left the shelter of your lotus feet, my life has been completely devastated. So nice, you know. That actually should be the feeling there in the heart. And then next verse. Lord Krishna is so merciful that if anyone appeals to him earnestly, he immediately releases the jiva from material entanglement. The next verse. The Lord Krishna fortifies him with this transcendental internal potency. So he builds like a fort around him. And this overbearing power of the Lord's spiritual potency weakens Maya's influence on the living entity. I mean, this is almost mysterious, right? How Krishna responds to that feeling in the heart, how we appeal to him. And proportionally, he protects. And then the three modes of material nature are not affecting us so much. So it's a very deep internal thing. It's all about the heart. How we respond, how we call out to Krishna, whether we are lamenting, right? And in Harinam Chintamani, it is said that if we chant the holy name without this Sambandha Gyan being deeply sunk to the heart level, our chanting is actually not the real thing. It is like a resemblance, a reflection, a shadow. Because only if that Sambandha Gyan really hits the heart, then it will become very natural when we chant that we turn towards the Lord and appeal to him. My dear Lord, please accept me. I have forgotten you for so many lifetimes. This is how we are meant to chant. And unfortunately, our chanting very easily becomes very mechanical. That we just walk around and we don't turn to the Lord. No, we are not longing for that relationship. And if we chant without this turning to the Lord and longing for the relationship, our chanting will not reestablish our lost and forgotten relationship. Let's be clear about that. Satchinanda Swami calls it the empty medicine capsule. When we chant like this. Yes. It looks externally like the real thing, but when you open up the capsule there, oh, no medicine inside, therefore no effect. Yes. So we have to be very clear about that. We can spend many lifetimes chant with so-called chanting. We shouldn't even call it chanting. And we will not, all right, we get maybe some pious benefit and this and that, but bhakti will not develop because that kind of chanting where we don't turn to Krishna and appeal to him in helplessness and lamentation and longing and hankering, which Narada Muni is doing, it will not do anything in regards to our relationship with Krishna. We will never get there to actually develop some genuine feelings, some spiritual longings and feelings and hankerings, you know, because the purport always says, you know, where is it? Yes, they are conducted by one single desire to go back to Godhead. So this single desire of going back to Godhead only develops if we chant properly, because that establishes the relationship. And without the relationship being a little bit established, we will not have the single desire of wanting to go back to Godhead. We will not. We will want to stay here by hook or by crook. Yes. I remember one Madhuji was once telling me about one lady, one Madhuji in Ukraine who was just about to leave her body. And the devotees asked her, so do you want to go back to Krishna? And she said, no. And everybody was shocked. What? You don't want to go back to Krishna? And she gave a very meaningful answer. She said, actually, I have no relationship with Krishna. Yes, no relationship. And this can very easily happen when we take empty medicine capsules. Then we will find ourselves at the moment of death, facing death, and we will realize, wow, no relationship actually. And if our relationship is not established with Krishna, we will not want to go back home to him. We will cling on to all kinds of other relationships around us, and we will want to stay. Yes. And we can say our fear of death is basically an indication of how much this relationship has been established. Right? If this relationship has been more tangibly established, we will not be fearful of death. We will welcome that opportunity. Finally, that glorious moment is coming where I can join Krishna and go back home. He's been waiting for so many lifetimes. So why delaying? Of course, it is our duty to maintain the body and use it in Krishna's service. By the way, I have 2 times faced that diagnosis of cancer. So I have a little bit of some tiny little experience what it is like when you stand a little closer to the edge. And they were probably the best moments of my whole life. It gave me so much realization. So, and because it was both times stage 1, so all right, I had, you know, surgery and chemo and the whole lot. But I realized very clearly, you know, this actually having cancer, because I know your temple president is facing this situation. So actually I find having cancer is a fantastic way to prepare. It gives you that warning. And it gives you that opportunity to throw overboard all kinds of baggage and luggage there, because if we want to go back home, back to Godhead, luggage allowance is zero. There's no 23 kilos check-in and 8 kilos hand luggage or something, but it is zero. And we have to throw things overboard. We have to let go. And I mean, having cancer, you know, being diagnosed with cancer gives you that good warning. I find that much more auspicious than, you know, dying in a car accident or heart attack or something where you don't get any warning. Yes, yes. So we have to learn to see things a bit more deeper, you know. And I mean, I hope that when my time comes that, yeah, I will be able to just hand myself over into the Lord's hands. Okay, Krishna, here I am, whatever you desire, I'm ready. And let's just focus on going back home. Only desire is to go back home, back to Godhead. This is what it says in the purport, you know? But if we get all, oh, try this thing and that thing and stay here, and why? Krishna's been waiting for so many lifetimes. So let's get ready. Let's focus on leaving. Yeah, so, but we can only have that approach if our relationship with Krishna is a little more deeply established. Yes, and that's through chanting. And through chanting and turning mindfully to Krishna, appealing to him, calling out to him, please accept me. Cultivating a longing for the relationship when we chant. Only that kind of chanting will actually help to establish our relationship. And in the same way, there's another second secret to the chanting, because it says here in the purport that he is non-envious and he's got no other desire for material gain and so on. So that we only really achieve when we chant, not only turning to Krishna and longing for the relationship, but longing to serve. Please, Krishna, let me serve you and your devotees. That longing to serve, that establishes us in dasya. It's very logical. If we spend, everybody spends 2 hours every day chanting japa, longing to serve, sooner or later we will get the point that we are servant. Well, that makes sense. It's so simple, actually. So, and being established in dasya, so the longing to serve, that frees us from all other tendencies of enjoying and controlling. And only then we will be able to be non-envious. Because envy simply comes from the desire to enjoy. Yeah, so turning to Krishna, longing for the relationship and longing to serve, these two longings, they will get us there that we come to the point where our only desire is to go back to Godhead. And of course, we often say and hear this, that pure devotee doesn't mind to come back. You know, pure devotee, for him, there's no difference whether he's in this built world or in the material world. He's already serving Krishna, fully absorbed, no difference. So, but let's be clear, let us not imitate this, you know, because if we say, oh, I don't mind, whatever Krishna wants, well, let's be honest, usually we say like this because we are actually detached to be here. And that's why we say, oh, devotee doesn't mind to come back. Yeah, yeah. Let's be clear that it's a very high level, very high level to say, oh, whatever Krishna desires, heaven or hell or earth or, you know, earthly planet or spiritual world, it's no difference for me. That's a very high level. We are not on that level. We are meant to desire to go back to Godhead. Yes. We are meant to long for the relationship. Yes. So, and another quick little thing, the chanting of the holy name is not the only main and foremost thing. It's one track, but there is a second track which moves the train of Goloka Express there back home, back to Godhead. Second track is service attitude, meaning service in humility, service according to Vaishnav etiquette and culture. So the chanting very much has to be connected with our Vaishnav etiquette and culture. That kind of keeps us, that helps us to transform these ego patterns of behaviors and the envious patterns of behaviors into non-envious patterns of their behaviors. Because if we don't have this spiritual culture and Vaishnav etiquette, what happens? We chant very nicely, but then we fall back into our false ego moods and behavior. It's like an elephant taking bath and then, boom, throwing all the dust back on his back. Right? Yeah, this is what happens if we don't understand the importance of learning and living according to Vaishnav etiquette and culture. So that's why this Vaishnav etiquette and culture is so important. Because unless we apply that in our life, we very easily always fall back to our material patterns of behaviors. And the culture and etiquette is like the crutches which Krishna gives us to learn to move forward and to transform these patterns of behaviors into transcendental ways and Vaishnav ways of behaviors. That's the whole importance of Vaishnava etiquette and culture. It is meant to help us to become Trinada Pisunichina. If we were already more humble than a blade of grass and more tolerant than a tree, then we would not need Vaishnava etiquette and culture. It would automatically manifest. But because we are not, because spiritual culture is, materialistic culture is propagating the opposite. It is feeding the false ego and blowing it up. And the more you can show off, the more successful you are. That's the mood. You know? It's completely 180 degrees opposite to Vaishnav life and culture, what we should be striving for. So, and we are all heavily conditioned by these material, propagandas that we have to show off and, you know, be the center of attention and. So, and that's why we need Vaishnav etiquette and culture to get off that. So both have to go parallel like the two tracks, you know, of chanting the holy name and at the same time service mood according to Vaishnava etiquette and culture. And then hopefully we will get there that we will be non-envious like Narada Muni and filling our thoughts and our heart with longing for Krishna and hankering for that relationship. And the only aim and desire is to go back home, back to Godhead. Okay, so yes, I think maybe I'll just see 2-3 minutes if anybody has some comment or question about this point. Yes, Prabhu. Say it again, I can't hear you. Loud. Yes. Yes. I think I just explained that, no? Yes, but I said that a pure devotee doesn't, you know, but we are not on that level. We cannot imitate. When we say that, it usually means we are attached. We want to come back. So that's why at our neophyte level, we have to long. Yes, and not, you know, artificially jump on this high level of being a pure devotee. You know, pure devotee, there is one purport where Prabhupada says, ultimately there is no material world. There is only forgetfulness of Krishna. And those who are in forgetfulness of Krishna, they are said to be living in the material world. Right? And those who are fully absorbed 24 hours, you know, and only hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord and serving, they're already living in the material, spiritual world. But we are not on that level. No. Right? Okay. Yes, one last one. Well, it all starts. See, Prabhupada gave us the instruction that we should chant the holy name in the mood of a child crying out in helplessness for his mother. So, and that's how we are meant to chant. That's the start of cultivating spiritual emotions, that we cry out for Krishna. And if we can't cry out for Krishna, then we cry about that we can't cry. But somehow we have to start crying. And this should not be some external crying show or something, but deep internally in the heart, you know, crying out to Krishna helplessly. Oh, Krishna, I need you. I want you. Please accept me. Who are we to be accepted by Krishna? We have to beg. We have to long. That's what Rupa Goswami says. The only qualification required for pure bhakti is intense greed to get it. So intense greed for bhakti means longing for Krishna. So, and the very start is to hear about it. You know? And of course, our longing for Krishna directly manifests in how eager we are to attend the programs, to serve his devotees, and. You know, it cannot just be imitated longing for Krishna, but then, you know, we are not eager to serve or something. So if we are actually longing for Krishna, we are eager to do anything for his devotees, because Krishna's devotees are so dear to Krishna. And he says, not he is my devotee who claims to be my devotee, but he who is the devotee of my devotee. He is my real devotee. So that's how our longing has to manifest. Right? And we cultivate it in the chanting, crying out, longing for the relationship. Not so easy. Not so easy. Yes. Okay, so let me quickly say, a few little things about Vamanadeva. This is described in the 8th canto. So, as we may remember, he appeared in the womb of Aditi, son of Kasyapa Muni. And when he appeared, he came with the 4 auspicious items of conch, disc, club, lotus, four-armed form. And then he accepted the dwarf form, the Vamana form, the dwarf form, two-handed. So, and later on, as we may remember, Vamanadeva, he visited the sacrificial arenas where Bali Maharaj was conducting this sacrifice. And immediately everybody could see, oh, Vamanadeva, so effulgent. Everybody was standing up, greeting him and offering prayers. And Bali Maharaj wanted to offer something in charity. So he asked Vamanadeva what he desires. And Vamanadeva said, yes, 3 steps of land. So we don't have the time to go through the whole story. But as we know, these 3 steps of land ended up very differently than what Bali Maharaj first imagined. And for me, there is 2 main nice points, 2 instructions I like to extricate from this whole Leela. First of all, when Bali Maharaj contemplates whether, you know, he should give these 3 steps of land or not, there's this nice little point where he says, actually, whatever we have, sooner or later, it will be taken away from us anyway, through death. So better to give it voluntarily in charity and get the benefit of giving in charity rather than hanging on to it. So I think that's a nice point to remember, you know, that we can always remember, yes, whatever I have, sooner or later, I have to leave it behind anyway. It will be taken away from me by merciless death. So better I give it voluntarily. And then the other nice thing is that Bali Maharaj very strongly, he emphasizes how important it is that one keeps one's promise. And there is a nice little paragraph from the purport. No, actually, it's the verse where Bali Maharaj says, I do not fear hell, poverty, an ocean of distress, falling down from my position, or even death itself, as much as I fear cheating a brahmana. So in other words, Bali Maharaj is saying, if we promise something, but then we don't keep that promise, we are actually a cheater. We are cheating. And Vaishnav mood is that we cannot not fulfill our promise. Vaishnava mood is we have to stick to our word. When we once say something, then we have to do it, no matter what, even if it means we have to sacrifice our life. That's Bali Maharaj's mood. You know, third step, there was no room. The steps were so huge that third step, he said, all right, put it on my head, which means basically he is willing to sacrifice his very life. So that actually has to be the mood of a Vaishnava in all regards, whether this is initiation vows or whether this is marriage vows or whether it is simply, you know, giving one's word that, yes, I will do that service, I will do this, that. Once we give our word, we have to stick to it, by hook or by crook, even if things turn out completely differently than expected. Yeah? And often, we can observe this attitude that, oh yeah, I wanted to do that, but now, sorry, the circumstances have changed and I can't do it. Right? Somehow things are not the way I expected to be, so therefore, oh sorry, can't do it. Or married life, oh, it's different than I thought it would be. Oh well, so now I don't like it anymore, so I get divorced. This is not Vaishnav attitude, actually. That's the attitude of material life in its culture, where sense gratification is the all in all. As long as it suits me and it's pleasing to me, all right, I do it. But as soon as it's not pleasing to me, I quit. I don't stick to my word. That's not the Vaishnav mood. Vaishnav mood is we stick to our word. That has to really, you know, be deeply established in our heart, that if we don't stick to our word, we are a cheater. And Bali Maharaj is expressing, he doesn't fear anything more than that, cheating a brahmana. That's the worst thing for him. Yeah, so, I simply like this instruction really very much from this whole Bali Maharaj Vamanadev Leela, that we have to, you know, that we have to cultivate that mood of sticking to our word. Doesn't matter on what level it is. If we say we're going to do something, we have to do it. Even if we have to really put ourselves out and change all other things or whatever. But, you know, our word, we have to stick to that. Okay, so 2 minutes left for Jiva Goswami. Sorry about that. Yeah, so Jiva Goswami, he appeared 1513 to 1598, and he was the nephew of Rupa and Sanatan. And he was actually known as the most systematic preacher amongst the six Goswamis, because he actually started organizing the preaching mission. And he was the one who trained Srinivas and Narottam and Shamananda, actually. So he had that vision of an organized preaching mission. And not only that, he was also extremely scholarly and learned and wrote so many books. Srila Prabhupada said the Vaishnavas are by far the greatest philosophers in the world, and the greatest among them was Jiva Goswami. That's a statement of Srila Prabhupada. So, and he was the youngest amongst the six Goswamis, and he was the most prolific writer, and he came at the very end to Vrindavan after all the other Goswamis came. And that's why he is not so much mentioned in the various biographies of Mahaprabhu. But in any case, his father died when he was very young, and he grew up being absorbed in worshipping Krishna Balaram. And Mahaprabhu instructed him once in a dream to go to Navadvip. And there he toured Navadvip Dham with Nityananda Prabhu, visiting all the different places. And then after that, he went to Benares to study Sanskrit. And then he came to Vrindavan to be under the shelter of his uncles, and he took initiation of Rupa Goswami. And he wrote 18 major works on Vaishnava philosophies, 400,000 verses, all different sandarbhas. In that little book, The Six Goswamis, there is a chapter about him, and there's a whole list of all the sandarbhas. I mean, they were, to me, they're all unknown, and I can't really say much about the literature he wrote. And also, it is mentioned there that he supervised the construction of Radha Damodar Temple. And Prabhupada took great inspiration from Rupa and Jiva Goswami when living there at Radha Damodar Temple. And also in that nice little book, Our Srila Prabhupada, A Friend to All. You know that book? Our Srila Prabhupada, A Friend to All. Very amazing book. It's this compilation by Mula Prakriti Devidasi about all kinds of personalities who lived in Vrindavan and Delhi and Mayapur, who knew Prabhupada before he left to the Western world. And Mula Prakriti Mataji interviewed them, and they share all kinds of amazing encounters with Prabhupada and memories and realizations. And there's one, that book really is a must. You have to read it, because that really gives insights into Prabhupada's life, which we actually don't have much information of, you know, Prabhupada's life before he got on the Jaladuta and so on and went to America. And there's pretty moving, heart-moving stories which really give us some glimpse how Prabhupada was preparing himself for this impossible mission, how he used to go to Advaita Acharya's house and chant there all day, praying helplessly, praying for mercy, and you know. And there's one amazing little story where one sadhu in Vrindavan shares that he used to visit sometimes Prabhupada in Radha Damodar Temple. And one day he could see that Prabhupada was in a very serious mood, and he was asking Prabhupada, how are you? What is happening? You know, and Prabhupada shared, I had some visitors last night. And that devotee was asking more Prabhupada, what happened? Who came? And he said, three very effulgent, beautiful personalities came. And they were only dressed in kopens and had lotus eyes and very effulgent. And, well, they were Rupa Sanatana and Jiva Goswami. And they were giving guidance to Prabhupada how to write his books. And this was not a dream, but they actually appeared there. Yes. And then that person was asking more, but Prabhupada wouldn't say any more. That was all he shared, you know. So this gives us some insights what intimate and confidential relationship Prabhupada had with these three personalities, and how he actually received direct guidance and encouragement and mercy from them for his mission, you know. Okay, so thank you very much. Time is up. I'm 5 minutes over. Just to finish off, I want to quickly one more time announce that I have this little book here, Spiritual Culture, Krishna's Divine System. Very, very important topics. I'm trying to give some insights to basically illustrating how our Vaishnava culture is Krishna's system in order to give us stability and harmony in this world. And we will discover that all our social problems, like single mothers, divorce, neglected children, violence towards women, child abuse, and They are all global reactions for not following Krishna's system, because we think our system is better than Krishna's system. And we think Krishna's system is old-fashioned and outdated, and. And this book, I'm trying to give some little insights. And this is also the introduction to our seminar on Sunday, being in harmony with the other gender. The picture is a little misleading. People might think this is just about man-woman relationship, grihastha life, but no, it's not. It's not. It's so much more deep, actually. And the course is really suitable for everybody in any ashram. I had Marjas, Brahmacharis in this course. So it's highly important to get some insights how Krishna's system is meant to function, because the world is upside down and we as ISKCON devotees are meant to show the world how human life is meant to be lived. You know? Then our preaching becomes powerful. Yeah, and so this is an important and crucial topic, very relevant in the modern days of ISKCON. There's so much confusion on all different levels. And also, I have a couple of little leaflets which I have outside there on the table for things which I'm conducting in Mayapur, just in case somebody is planning to go to India. Holy Name Retreat in Ekachakra over Christmas. Very sweet and deep experience, 22nd to 26th of December. I arrange everything on donation basis. All you have to do is be in Mayapur and register on the website. I arrange the bus, the accommodation, nice prasadam. I do it every year, and it's very sweet. And then I have a leaflet with a course schedule, 5 weeks of systematic courses all about this topic of spiritual culture throughout the January. So if anybody is interested in that, you're welcome to take a leaflet. And last but not least, my nice little brochure about our Institute for Spiritual Culture. I only have very few left there, but if you're interested, then please take one. Okay, thank you so much for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktavinda ki, Guru Premanandi, Hari Hari Bol, Hare Krishna.